On this episode of Football 301, Charles McDonald joins me for the week two preview of the NFL season. We look at five games, a little extended breakdown with two little snack pack breakdowns at the end of the show. Really fun episode. Football is here. See you guys in a sec. Hello and welcome back to Football 301. I am Nate Tice. We have our week two preview in store for you. Charles McDonald is going to join me in about 10 seconds to preview five of these games, plus a one little quick little glimpse, a little one shot from each of us at the end of the show. So about seven games of this weekend slate, no Friday games this week. So Thursday and Sunday, Monday slate, back to the usual weekend of football, back into the rhythm of everything. And from here on out, every Thursday to help preview every weekend's games of the NFL and maybe some college. That is the great Charles McDonald, Mr. Four Verts. How are you doing today, Chuck?
Doing all right. I got stuck behind a dead subway train on my way into the office today, which is part of the reason why I was there, why it took me so long to get here. But I was underground for like an hour with barely any AC, and it's about 85 degrees today in New York. So I've had better mornings, but I think this will get me moving back in the right direction.
It's 85 here in Vegas right now. Same weather. Yeah, we're over the hump.
We were done with this in New York. So
yeah, that's what I felt like in Vegas. It hit like 102, 104 last week. I was like, you got to be kidding me. But on my computer on the bottom, I could see weather and then, cloudy, all that stuff. It says 85 degrees and smoke because we got the California fires that have come over here. Yeah. Some cool sunrise stuff.
Time of year. Yeah. We're in the pump fake time of the year. There's two pump fake times, like right out of winter going into spring and then out of summer going into fall, where it's like, oh, relief from whatever the extreme was, and then you're right back in it for a couple more weeks. And
it's the tease. Yeah, it's the weather blue balls that Mother Nature likes to give you. That isn't there some issues with like New Jersey transit and stuff too?
There was this summer, big time. Yeah, because it was getting so hot that forest fires were starting or bushfires were starting next to like the tracks, and things would get delayed for days at a time.
Just fires on both coasts. It's great. Nothing to see here. Yeah. Well, God dang, that's not what I want to hear. Bushfires starting in the city. Greatest city in the world.
That's right.
No, but like I said before, we're going to be previewing a half dozen plus one of these games. A little bit more of a deep dive on five of them. Charles and I will talk about when both teams have the ball in these matchups. And then we'll preview how a team can win or cover if you're in that kind of thing, but how to make it close at the very least. So to start us off, I believe this is going in chronological order. We're going to have the Seattle Seahawks at the New England Patriots. The Patriots are 3.5-point underdogs. Charles, when the Seahawks have the ball, what's something that you are keeping an eye on or something that is of note when you're watching this game?
I think Grubb's going against a defense that has full talent, not just kind of one guy. Not to say that the Broncos defense are filled with bums because, we've said on this podcast, they looked okay. But I think the Patriots defense in terms of personnel, especially what we saw last week against Cincinnati, that's probably a step up from what they saw against Denver. So I think that that'll be interesting just to see how that plays out. And to me, that's probably the key to the game because I think when you look back at what happened to the Patriots week one, I would imagine most of their games are probably going to look like that, 16 to 10, 17 to 16, 20 to 17 range. They're not going to be scoring a whole lot of points. So if you can just find a way to score, it's called three touchdowns versus defense, probably stay away from Christian Gonzalez because I thought he looked really good last weekend. That's probably going to be your key to win. Don't need to score too much, but it's also pretty difficult to score in this defense.
It's a race to 20 type game. That's what it feels like. Yeah, I'll usually say live bullets or bullets start flying or weapons or anything like that. The Patriots are truly represented with the muskets, on offense. It's not a machine gun. It's not a pistol. It's a musket. That is their offense. Muskets and cannons. It's old school as it gets.
Gerard's already said Jacoby is the slowest black quarterback in the league. So muskets and cannons.
I love that. That's that offense. That's really the defense too. This is how, like you said, but this is how they're going to win games. It's going to be a lot of run first. What they're hoping and what you're starting to see is that then they can drop in Drake May somewhere in this season when they kind of feel good about the offensive infrastructure. Pretty good start. But when I watch this defense, this is a classic Patriots defense. Big, burly, smart. They're doing a lot of checks to mess with Burrow. So like Burrow would check, then the Patriots would recheck. And then you could see Burrow a lot going like, oh, shoot. Like kind of going... like, because he didn't know whether I should I get back to the original play. Like, you could tell it's like, okay, I'm just going to go with the play. And you do a lot of bailout options. That's why I felt a lot of, really tight. Kind of traditional quarterback teaching is if you feel like your feet are late or you get moved off your spot, it's just check it down or throw underneath. Like, Philip Rivers is the epitome of it, the king of it. Burrow is kind of an extreme version of it right now, good and bad, but you could really see it. They were making him feel uncomfortable, making him feel tight. So he's just looking underneath. But when I watch this, I'm curious about the Seahawks interior. Their offensive line, it's very, you know, it's okay. Charles Cross looks great. I will say that at left tackle, he had a great week one, but Kenneth Walker's banged up. He can be so boom bust. He did have a nice week one, but with Charbonnet starting, he's better at staying on schedule, but it's just such a different ask against the Patriots defense because they're just so big and they just push you and push you and push you. So yeah, it's an interesting matchup. You mentioned Grubb, his offensive line coach is a college guy as well. A little different. I know they went against Vance Joseph, but this is going to be another difference, like welcome to the NFL, this kind of defense, just not only size, but some of the scheme stuff on the back end. Do the Patriots double team anyone? I know I said one thing, but this is kind of like, this became more of a interesting scheme battle than I originally thought it was going to be once I started kind of picking at it. So yeah, do the Patriots double team anyone? Like that's always a curious thing, who they think is your biggest threat. I would guess it would be DK, but do they just put Gonzalez on DK and then double somebody else, Lockett, who's been banged up, a JSN or somebody like that. So it's really, really interesting game as far as design scheme and players wise. So when the other side has the ball, Charles, the Patriots, what are you checking out? What are you focusing on?
Red zone. What? I didn't just say that.
I just said how much the Patriots run it.
How much they run the ball.
I know it's not sexy, but that's it. They're rock fights, these games.
Yeah, and I think, and it just sounds so football cliche, but I think when you're talking with this offense, it's right. Just avoiding negative plays because you don't want to be with this offense and where they are right now. Right. You know, you don't want to be behind the sticks with this group of players that you have right now. And especially going against someone like Mike McDonald, who I know last week was not really representative of a real NFL passing game, but the first week, Seattle Seahawks defense, like, you got to check. Looks better than it did last year. The personnel on the defensive line is quality. I think that might be an avenue where it's tough for the Patriots to run the ball. But also, I think the Patriots offensive line is a little undersold in terms of like their run blocking ability. Rhamondre Stevenson just had 120 yards. I know the Bengals interior, we talked about it all preseason. It's not the toughest unit in the world, but you know, we're talking about doom and gloom. You can't even think about putting Drake May in because he might die and end up in the hospital if you play him. They looked okay for week one, you know. Yeah,
like, they look better than the Seahawks
offensive line, right? They might be the best offensive line in this unit, and they need to play well because if they start giving up sacks and TFLs,
right,
they might not score a point.
Right. It was, they dared the Bengals corners to tackle, and the Patriots won the bet every single time. But that's going to be their game plan. They're going to just pound it, pound it, pound it, pound it, and it's not sexy runs. It's not the Dolphins run game. A lot of pitches and side to side. It is truly duo and stuff that's just, I mean, there is no hiding what they're doing. But the thing is, when you get into games like this, maybe against a Seahawks defense that likes to get funky and likes to have guys running every which way, likes to use their DBs a ton. Okay, maybe you can catch them. Maybe you kind of just punch them in the mouth. That's one way, even last year with the Ravens defense, which was better personnel. But that was one way you kind of caught them a little bit. Was like, hey, I'm just going to run it and just screw it. Like, you guys can do everything you want, but this is my clean answer. Patriots have to do it by default. Mike McDonald is a very good coach and very astute on what other teams want to do. So I will say it's a sneaky Haas fight. Like, Patriots O-line versus Seahawks defensive line is like, it's a nice little Haas fight going on down there. So I'm excited to watch that, I guess. So that's all you're really going to watch. I don't think the passing game will be too sexy.
Yeah. Or you could just listen to the soothing sounds of Scott Hansen, you know?
Right. Right. But what this always happens is this, the game gets caught as the other ones go to commercial. And right. It's like, ah, sorry. I know we have 8 games on 7-hour commercial, but all right. So let's go into Patriots have the ball all backed up again against the Seahawks. It is, oh, it's 3-2. We're entering the end of the first half. Yeah. That's, I can already picture it right now. All right. Actually, I like the Seahawks offense a little better than that. I'm sorry. You guys score more than that. All right. How can the Seahawks win? What are you picturing? They are favored.
Yeah, they should be favored. They're the better team. I mean, as impressive to me as that Patriots team was on Sunday, against a Bengals team that still has Super Bowl aspirations, like they did just have the number 3 pick in the draft. It's going to take some time. I don't really see an area where, like, if you're a Seahawks fan or even like a Seahawks coach and you're looking at like our defensive personnel versus particularly at like DB versus wide receiver, we feel like we should win that pretty comfortably. And then versus the run, Tyrell Dodson this weekend, dude, he is so funny because, dude, all he wants to do is just trigger downhill versus the run. And he missed some stuff behind him, like on some play action stuff. But if he's able to just kind of get going downhill and they can kind of eliminate that run game, then you're talking about like some of the weakest wide receivers in the league going against one of the better defensive coordinators in Devon Witherspoon. That just seems like a tough battle. So I just think if you can stop the run, you'll probably win the battle of attrition by the end of the game.
I actually used the word, I used war of attrition in my write-up. I said Patriots don't have the horses on offense and can't throw the ball, and they lose the war of attrition. That it's a field position game, ugly loss, you know, ugly watch, like a 17-10 loss, something of that sort. No, great shout out with Dodson. And this is a game for him. Hopefully he just doesn't get caught, you know, coming up so hard. Julian Love looked fantastic in this defense too. I know some people scoffed at his extension or re-signing. So, but I, you know, looks much better in this defense. They're very well game planned. He's able to play fast when he's game planned. But that's how I kind of picture that if the Seahawks win, is just that they take care of business kind of thing. Don't make mistakes. Actually have some decent drives. It's not going to be easy on offense, but they have a couple drives. Get some good field position. Kind of just win it out in the end. How did the Patriots win?
If they almost do the reverse, like they flip the war of attrition onto the Seahawks, like just pummel the absolute shit out of them. You know, we're not letting you run the ball. Kenneth Walker, like, we're in every gap. You're not going to be able to bounce stuff. And now you're looking at, like, one-on-ones on the outside against Christian Gonzalez, a pretty quality secondary, I think. I think that's where the Patriots can win. But it's just going to have to – the way that they can win is one of the hardest ways to win in the modern NFL. Just a defensive takeover. Just go beat the crap out of them. I don't know if they can do that, but that's the avenue if they want to get it done.
That's it. That's why you want the better players, because they just make a lot of things more right. This is like, you have to just, everything has to go perfect, just like last week did for them. I mean, really, they forced a fumble at the one and ball just bounced perfectly to them. That's how you win. They have to win that way. So yeah, I think it's pretty obvious, like, building a Patriots win here is basically last week. Limit them on offense, get really good field position, and just run, and make no mistakes in the passing game. So I'm just curious who they take away. Like, if they did more zone last week, so I'm curious if they go back to the one double stuff and or even zero double, which I call it, but doubling two guys. I'm curious if they do that and make it even harder. All right, moving on to the next game. We got the Browns at the Jags. This is a weird matchup where I remember multiple of these games. One last year, I remember when my dad was with the Jags in like 2010. They played there, and the Browns had that returner, number 16.
Josh Cribbs.
Yeah, and I think he had I think it was like a breakout game or a big game against him. But anyways, Browns at Jags. Jags are favored by 3 at home. When the Browns have the ball, Charles, what are you watching?
With my heart or my mind? With my mind.
Let's start with your mind.
With my heart, I want to see what happened last week, but with my mind, I think how can they win this game? I stared at this for so long yesterday, and like, I don't really know, because if this is your quarterback reality, you can't win this game. I don't think not if the Jaguars defense is what they were last week against Miami, where you feel good about how you played outside of the two chunk plays by Tyreek and Jalen Waddle, which is like charged to the game kind of stuff because they're that caliber of player. Mm-hmm. But, you know, Tua is way better than Deshaun Watson is right now. And they held that offense to one of like the toughest outputs in terms of just getting the ball down the field, moving mm-hmm. the ball that they've had since Mike McDaniel got there. So now you're going
third worst game by six drop X success rate.
Yeah.
That Tua has had.
And it felt like that too, mm-hmm. Watching it. So I don't really know what the Browns can do. I'm not really sure like where Conklin and Wills are in terms of their health, but like if they're back in the same situation as last week with the backup tackle duo, plus you have this quarterback who can't really seem to make the plays that he used to, plays that looked easy for him 4 years ago, he just can't make them now. I don't really know if that's something that they can overcome right now. Now, like, it does help, obviously, being able to lean on Myles Garrett and that secondary on the back end because, you know, one of the tough parts, like, when you're a team like this is when you get to the end of the game, I thought that the Browns defense for the whole game played all right, but you're just getting nothing, right? And you just keep getting nothing, getting bad field position, sacks, turnovers. You just keep getting put in a bad spot, and that's how a good defense can end up like giving up, you know, 30 points on the day. And I can see that happening again, but I can see it happening every week. And until Watson shows some signs of life, I struggle to even find a spot where they can really win this game. And that's really because the Jaguars defense looks so tough this week. There's no universe right now where this team can like consistently play well against one of the best defenses in the league.
He's become a safe, but at the same time, negative player as far as taking sacks and turning the ball over. But he's become such a safe player that, this is Deshaun Watson I'm talking about, that he doesn't offset all those negatives. Remember how many sacks he took his rookie year and really early in his career? That was the big thing. He still plays like that. But he is the same guy. They're running his favorite RPO that the Dolphins stole that they literally call Watson because they took it from the Texans and Deshaun Watson. Look at that. Bill O'Brien, take a bow. But they they ran it again in this game. I want to say the first drive. And this with this play I'm talking about, you'll see the Dolphins run it like every other play. But it is a zone relook, like split zone, where the tight end works across. He bluffs the D end, runs to the flat. And then they run like cross verticals or switch verticals by the other guys. Usually you hit the flat or you just hand the ball off, but usually you're hitting the flat. It's a big gain. Tua sometimes will hit the inner seam. Sometimes he's gotten decent at it because they run it 500 times. So they run it. Deshaun doesn't even break the pocket. So they fake it and he just takes a step and then tries to throw it. I think it gets sawed off right away. I know this is just a one play extrapolating, but I'm giving an example. This is the difference between Deshaun Watson of yesteryear and right now. That play is not a naked bootleg movement throw anymore. It's one step and throw. There's no one he's threatening with his athleticism. He doesn't have that twitch anymore. He doesn't have that bounciness, that ability to make guys miss, bounce off tackles, and then make the big play. So he's become a safe quarterback who didn't throw the ball once past the sticks on third and long. He had 10 dropbacks. He went all five of his passes were short of the sticks. He scrambled three times and he took two sacks. So you can't win that way. This offense doesn't have Nick Chubb right now. I like Jerome Ford, but Jerome Ford to me is like a solid back. You don't build the offense around Jerome Ford. He's just a nice back to have if you have a good passing game. Would have liked him with the Chiefs or somebody like that. But the fact with this is that when I'm watching this, that this offense, you can tell, should have Nick Chubb because of how they run, how they build everything. And Nick Chubb isn't walking through that door right now. So this is how this offense is going to be until they make a change of quarterback, because I have enough sample size. It's not just one game. This is from last year too. And this is exactly how he played last year. So what makes me think this is different after he had a whole offseason to work at it? And I know he was banged up, but he got healthy and everything. So they have to make everything a rock fight, especially against this Jags defense even without Tyson Campbell was really tough.
I think one of the most concerning things that you can from last week's game that you can kind of spin forward is, okay, what year was Deshaun drafted? 2017?
17.
So this is season 8. There's a lot of free runners in that Dallas game just coming straight through the offensive line. And to me, if your offensive line is going to be hurt and you've been an NFL quarterback, you know, for almost a decade, you should be able to mitigate some of that before before the play starts. So now you have someone who's clearly diminished. They're not giving you any, you know, mental upside where you're helping your backup offensive line. Hey, you know, we got someone about to blitz through. Let's change this picture real quick. They're not doing any of that.
No.
Just free runners. Like, dude, you're letting Micah Parsons sometimes walk through your offensive line. Or if he's not, then someone's looping right back behind him and they're just all a mess. And that's kind of how, like, the few times the Falcons were able to get home last year was when Nielsen blitzed. Like, that's one of his mm-hmm. strengths. Like, you get Zimmer and Nielsen back-to-back with backup offensive line and a quarterback that's right. not helping you. That's trash.
The Cowboys defense is the worst defense to go against if you have quarterback issues. And protection
stuff.
It's
tough. This one's not much easier, though.
No, it's not. And that's the thing. Even with Campbell out, I'm like, all right, who's going to threaten out there? You know, Cooper, and they have nice kind of pieces, but it's not a threatening passing game. And that's a big difference. And I'll give another example about kind of how this team feels and how white flag everything feels with this passing game. They had a third and long. I sent this to you. They got to empty, and they ran a flat route with two blockers on one side and a flat route with one blocker on the other side, or a bubble, one blocker on the other side. Third, I think it was third and eight or third and nine that they ran that play. I've seen that play sometimes run where guys check into it against a cover zero where they catch them. They called this from the huddle that this was the play call no matter what the look was. That is a white flag safe play because all of a sudden the quarterback just has to pick a side and throw a flat route. You're saying negative yards on the play. If it's third and one, third and two, the Bengals have done this before, but it's third and one, third and two, not third and nine, third and eight. That, why do you give this guy money? Like all this guaranteed money. Like that's why you pay these guys or they draft them high is to win on third and long, at least once or twice. Not, you know, it doesn't have to be every time, but yeah. All right, let's go to the other side. Enough misery. Jags defense though, check them out. Even without Tyson Campbell, check out the Jags defense. All right, but when the Jags offense has the ball against this Browns defense, what are you checking out, Charles?
Which wide receivers are winning one-on-ones? That's, to me, that's the big thing here. It's so tough because they were moving the ball last week against Miami. And then the second half, it turned to hell. Like outside of the 94-yard drive they had that ended in a fumble on the one-yard line, I think they had 10 yards the rest of the half on like 17 plays. So that's, I mean, obviously, like that's just ridiculously bad. Can't have that. Like, there's nothing to say besides that's just like so bad, it's stupid almost. So like you just got to find a way to not only get explosives, but just move the ball. And I think if you're going to be in a spot where that Browns defensive line, it still should be tough to run against. So you might have to rely on the pass game more. That will worry me a little bit, just because I still think really high of the Browns like DB room. And I'm still trying to figure out like where I am on the Jags wide receiver room, because like the first half, they looked pretty good. And like when they were kind of driving on the 94-yard drive, they looked pretty good. But like outside of that, you didn't really get anything from the Jaguars offense. So some of those guys are just gonna have to win, just straight up beat Denzel Ward, beat Martin Emerson. It's a lot tougher than it sounds, because it's not like we've been too high on the Jaguars wide receiver unit. But I think that's where the Jaguars need to win, because dude, if you start getting these guys locked up and Myles Garrett's breathing down your neck, like this game also has big rock fight potential, I think.
It does. Well, and the weather, there's a hurricane in the area. Right. So it's pouring all week, I think. And now it looks like it's raining all weekend in Jacksonville too. My issues, as much as I like my guy, Trevor Lawrence, he's not a mutter by trade. He is not. He has had some issues with fumbles in the rain in the past. I'll go back to the Eagles game that they played 2 years ago. And that one, I think he had four fumbles in that game. But that is one thing I'd be curious about. But also, it's just that the Browns' entire team is built in the trenches, especially their defensive line and their pass rush, and really just their ability to blow up runs, too. This Jags run game is very boom-bust. They actually looked nice, though. I will commend them until the fourth quarter. That run game had some nice moments, the Jaguars in week one. Is the Dolphins' run defense crazy good? I don't know, actually. I actually thought they looked okay, too. But going against this, totally different task. And that's where I think it's, again, going to be very boom-bust, because that's what the Browns want you to do. That's what Jim Schwartz wants to do. He wants to create TFLs and chaos and slant guys and move guys around and blitz corners, do all the funky stuff. So you got to catch him once. that would be the key for the Jaguars offense. You don't have to do it every time. This isn't going to be a high success rate game. This might, you want to create two explosives in the run game, and you did your job there. It was bad. I wouldn't say it was bad, but it was weird last week. Kind of pumped this guy up, and of course, I gave him the heat-seeking jinx. Anton Harrison was kind of like the worst lineman for the Jags last week. Jalen Phillips, I want to give him his flowers. He was, you know, put him in the torture chamber a little bit. But that still, expect a bounce back game there. This is quite a game to try and bounce back from. Bounce back too. I thought Trevor had a real nice game. He missed.
Yeah,
he missed two throws. He missed, including the first one. And he had four or five brilliant throws, including the touchdown, but even leading up to the touchdown, had some nice throws on that drive. But to your point, that's what the Jaguars feel like. It's a stretch of brilliance where you're like, wow, this is a good offense. And then three drives where you're like, wow, this is a bad offense. Can probably feel more like that in this game. So how can the Browns win this game, Charles? I think it's pretty self-explanatory after we've laid this out.
You got to go 85 Bears on them.
Yeah. That's
basically it.
Create explosives on defense. That's what it is.
Because there's no reason to trust this offense the way it looks right now. It's just not serious.
And if like the Browns offensive plan, of course, is going to have to run the ball. They have to catch them once. Like, that's their goal. Like, just catch them once in a blitz and hopefully you get a touchdown. Like, that's how you have to do it. But the white flag offensive plays are a little concerning, especially against this defense. How can the Jags win?
I think the Jaguars can win by kicking a field goal.
You're saying embrace the double digits?
I think Brian Thomas is going to have a big day. Because someone's going to have to, I would just imagine that both teams have such a tough time moving the ball that someone's going to need to make an explosive for the Jags. Brian Thomas is your best bet. I don't know if this is just me like being a hot takey football fan, but Travis Etienne in the rain sounds a little scary to me.
It's very scary. The same guy that like threw the ball through the end zone, like with a wide open touchdown.
Dude.
And that's not like an irregular thing with him. That's
right,
like
I know.
Every couple of weeks with him since college. Like, this is him all the way. Seems like a great guy. Dude, but cool. Very frustrating football player, I feel like, when I watch him. Yeah, but the run game has to have life. It really does. And they got to catch him with a shot play. They're trying. I will commend whoever's calling plays in Jacksonville that they are trying to get Luke Farrell out there, the tight end. The problem with the Jags is that it's all a smattering of ideas. Like, they actually had some cool two tight end looks. Like, they put Ingram as a fullback and they did a play action off of it. And I was like, hey, all right, creativity. There we go. And then that's why they fall apart in the second half. That means they're not adjusting. They run out of good ideas. Like, that's literally a thing. They're a little scared to repeat plays, it looks like, which is like, you know, play it, call it till you stop it. Again, that's what Shane Steichen does so well, I think, more than anybody. So, yeah. God, that's really what it is. Take care of business. I feel like that's what they have to do on offense. Don't be the Jaguars on offense and shoot themselves in the foot.
Anything but that.
Yeah. Just don't. Why are you the way you are? All right. We are going to take a quick break and then come back with a couple more games. All right. We are back with a NFC tilt. Pretty good one. Two division favorites, I would say, after week one. We have the Bucks visiting the Detroit Lions, a former NFC Central matchup, a division after my own heart. The Lions are more than a touchdown favorites, 7.5-point favorites at home. Charles.
That just seems so crazy to me.
It's a lot. There's a lot of big spreads. Yeah. That's all I can say about it. But keep going.
I don't know. Like, I think the Lions are better than the Bucks, but 7.5 points after last week. And I guess what Vegas is saying, and I think it's fair to feel that way, or whoever's making these lines is saying, that Commanders game was not real. That was just not real.
It said more about the Commanders than it did
right,
the Bucks.
Right, than it did the Bucks.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's a real thing.
I think it's a real thing. But I will say,
NFL Rookie of the Week. Jane Daniels.
That's right. Yeah, definitely very real. Not just the best of a bad bunch.
Tragedy for Joe Alt or Devondre Sweat, who I will give a shout out to as well.
Yeah, he had a great game.
Yeah.
But like with Tampa Bay, I guess I'll start with Tampa Bay and where they can win. I mean, I really think it's going to come down to, because Baker can run this system well enough where I don't know if, like, I trust him to ever overcome, but, like, he's as good as the pieces around him are, kind of. Mm-hmm. And I kind of like this Bucks offense. So I guess the key for me is when you guys have, like, your big matchups versus their big matchups, and I would say that's, like, Mike Evans versus Carlton Davis, or even Graham Barton versus some of the guys they have in the interior, Tristan Wirfs, Aiden Hutchinson matchups. Like, are your star players playing like star players? Because the problem is they have, I think, or not that I think, I know, they have a lot more depth than the Bucks do right now. So, like, your A-plus players have got to win. And I think that's going to be a little bit tougher than advertised because, like, Terry and Arnold, I thought he had a great week. Last week to start off.
You got the DPIs, but he's handsy and he's a rookie. So they're going to call it. It's just like NBA rookies, guys. Like, translate the exact same thing to the NFL. You get no hero calls as a rookie. You get no late hits if you're the quarterback. You get 20 holding calls if you're offensive lineman. You get no defensive PIs if you're the receiver. You get all the DPIs and defensive holdings if you're a DB. It's just how it goes. It's just, I had to say that because he did have a good game.
Yeah. We don't know you, my guy.
It's just how it goes.
I think like the key is just going to be the Bucks superstars playing like superstars and winning, because on the outside, like I said, Terry and Arnold had a great first game. I think there's points like where the Lions, maybe like their pass rush depth could be a little overwhelming, but still, like the Bucks, it kind of remind me of one of these teams that we've talked about over the summer, like a better version of where like the Vikings and the Giants were last year, where it's like we are held together kind of by like our top players, but they have a little bit more depth underneath than some of the teams we saw just get bounced in the first round. But to me, like, that's kind of like their archetype. And they need those guys to play well, because I think Detroit just has, they have too much depth. But you know, we'll get to the other side of the ball, but like, I am pumped for the other side of the ball too.
That's a juicier matchup. This one, I would say my one liner about both sides of the ball actually, but just put a pin on the other side, is I'm watching third down on both sides. And I'm going in reverse with this, because how the Bucks perform on there, I think they're going to get to a lot of third downs, because I think that Lions run defense is going to kind of take it to their interior a little bit, to the guards. You got Luke Getteke at right tackle against Aiden Hutchinson. That'll be a fun little T-Rex battle on the outside. Then you got Tristan Wirfs, who looks phenomenal. Yeah. Which is going to be great too. Graham Barton looks good too at center, but I do think the Lions have the advantage there. Just their front seven's more complete than that offensive line, that run game. So I think they'll get to third downs. I still think if they ran a bunch of man coverage against the Rams, they're going to run a bunch of man coverage against the Bucks. Like, Rams is even harder, because I know it's similar to offenses, but all the bunch sets and motions, and when Puka's healthy and Cooper's healthy, I mean, they're just a bunch of guys out there motioning them out there. That's so tough. Liam Cohen was pretty cool. A couple of people tweeted this, but Liam Cohen was doing some Ram stuff with his the third down designs, which was they'd get into like a stack, they'd have a receiver on the outside, motion him inside, and have him like release through the stack. And what it does is just changes the release points for guys and makes it hard if you're in man coverage, because all right, it's not just straight up man to man. Sometimes when offenses get into bunches and stacks, defenses will have checks so they don't get picked. They don't get, you know, and offenses go, all right, how do we pick them? That's just the cat and mouse game on the outside. So this is a way to really mess with those rules. And Cohen looks like, he was like, yeah, that worked for us in LA. We have Mike Evans and Godwin and this guy, Jalen McMillan. Yeah, let's just keep the good times rolling. So I think you're going to just see more of that. So look for like bunch, stacks, little motions there on third down. How they hold up will be so interesting. And I just think, yeah, the Lions have the advantage in the run game. So I think it's going to be interesting. But the other side of the ball is even more interesting, players and scheme-wise, I think. When you are watching the Lions have the ball against this Bucks defense, Ben Johnson versus Todd Bowles, Jared Goff versus the Bucks defense. Antoine Winfield might be out. Antoine Winfield's out. Who's my guy? Levante David isn't him anymore, so I didn't want to say
that.
I was trying to think of somebody else, and Winfield's out, and McCollum's got a concussion. Oh, God. All right, but when the Lions have the ball, Chuck, what are you checking out?
I'm cutting everything out, and I'm just watching Frank Ragnow versus Vita Vea.
Great. I said, fantastic Haas fight. First Dude. Note here. Great just, Haas fight.
Every single play is going to sound like an earthquake, yeah. when, especially versus a run, because those are two of like the roughest, toughest guys in the NFL. Just
biggest playing, guys at their position. Yeah,
biggest
everything.
Guys, yep. freak athletes, you know. So that's something I'm really looking for. And, you know, Vita Vea, I love him because he's kind of like the perfect mix between like old school nose tackles and the guys who can play on the move a little bit, because he is, you know, 350 pounds. But for everyone who remembers during the draft process, just an incredible athlete for that size. And it translates too. So he ends up becoming like this super important linchpin for the entire defense, because to me, like, his presence is kind of what makes the entire front seven work. Like, you have a Vita Vea. I know, you know, Canty's been banged up, but like having Vita Vea allows Kalijah Kanti to go be a gap shooter and be aggressive in spots where he shouldn't be. You know, it allows you to develop some of these guys, allows you to play Levante David maybe a little longer than you should be playing him. It's
God, he looked better last year too.
Last year. Then I watched him try to cover some drags against Washington, and I was like, oh boy.
I played against Levante in college. Yeah. That's good for him, man.
Oh, great career. Great career. Bucks lifer, Ring of Honor guy. You
but
know?
we don't want another Bobby.
No. Well,
let's not do that again.
that's tackle leader, all pro. You know, Pro Bowl linebacker. Bobby
it was fun here. Seeing the Commanders fans in real time go, hey, what the hell? Actually see him go like, what is this? This is what I signed up for. I know, I'm sorry, guys. Sorry. Yeah, but
I think this is the key for the Bucs defense. Because I do think that this defensive personnel, especially for like where the Lions are, that secondary is gettable, especially if Winfield's out. To me, that's a pretty... stark advantage in terms of like skill talent to skill talent, Lions versus Bucks. So like they're going to need their front seven just whoop absolute ass up front and make life difficult for Jared Goff, because we've seen, you know, if you can get Jared Goff off rhythm and can't just rely on the play action, turn your back, throw Sam Laporta on an over route where no one's within 20 yards, that can get a little tough for him. But it's going to be tough for the Buccaneers defense because, you know, they are at a talent disadvantage in this game.
It's just hard because, I mean, this Lions team already showed last year too that they can find answers. So like last year they played in the regular season. This was a game that the Lions were playing Craig Reynolds and Divine Ozigbo at running back. Who's Divine Ozigbo? Don't need it now. He's a free agent right now. But they averaged fewer than 2 yards a pop. I think David Montgomery was banged up and he got went out early. That game, though, was very impressive from Ben Johnson and the offensive line coach Hank Fraley, as they went 9-16 on third down. And they were like they went bombs away on it too. It wasn't just like get past the sticks. There was a little bit of that, but they hit Jameson Williams on a deep ball. They had some really fun stuff to counter Todd Bowles' scheme. Just protection, good answers. But they also were doing cadence stuff. Like cheat account, what a cheat account is as soon as the center grabs, so there's no ready hot, ready go, anything like that. As soon as the center grabs the ball, he snaps it. And why you do that is so the defense is, they hear the cadence too, and they start getting ready. So this is a way for them to just go like, oh, shoot, oh, okay, you know, jump the gun on them. And they got that and hit Jameson Williams on a touchdown on third and long against that. So that, yeah, it's how they protect Jared Goff against Todd Bowles' blitz. It's how it is against every Bucs. Every time someone goes against the Bucs defense, what does third down look like? How do you protect it? Goff isn't great against pressure, but if you block it up for him, which the Lions can, he can gash you. And Jameson Williams, they have a good plan for him right now. I'd feel better about the Bucs defense if Winfield was for sure in, and I don't think he is, and McCollum is for sure in, and I don't think he is. He has a concussion. So that is why I'm a little antsy with this. And also, when the Lions were healthy running the ball in the playoff game, that was Jahmyr Gibbs when was just gashing them. So they what they end up with. Jahmyr Gibbs went 9-for-74 with the longer 31. David Montgomery went 10-for-33, 3.3, but I think he was efficient on that. So now that they have some backs, the run game, that's a good way to get after Bowles. Like you said, It's up to the front seven to make a lot of third and longs. Really, it's the same game plan on both sides of the ball. It's like win on first and second down. I know that sounds, again, we're going with basic football takes, but this game, it's very pertinent because this is a very much NFL matchup. Like the Lions offense versus the Bucs defense. It feels very NFL to me.
Yes.
Right? Like, under run game on first and second down, third down blocks versus blitzes. Like, yeah, like protection. Like
we're going to be under center versus 5-2. Yeah, this is real ball.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Great call. But it is with a 350-pound nose right in the middle. So, yeah, I mean, it all feels right. I love that. But, yeah, how could the Bucs win in you're creating a win for them or victory for them. I don't know why I said it like that.
I'm not sure. Like, this is another one that was tough for me because it's just not going to be as easy as it was versus the Commanders. Like, you're not going to have guys just streaking open, like, once a drive, like, down the field. One of the funny things last week was, like you said, Commanders fans come to the realization, like, oh, wait, hold on.
That's not the Bobby Wagner I knew.
I thought this defense was supposed to be a little better structured than
that.
Pep
in their step.
No, this is what it is. Like, you better go get the fearsome foursome plus another fearsome foursome up front, and then you can have a good defense. But like, it's just so player led that, you know, that's just gonna be a mess all season. But so for this one, I just kind of want to see what the Buccaneers can do. For lack of a better term, when they have to think on offense, like when they have to have to operate like an offense. Like, you're not just running Madden plays. Like, all right, let's just drop back and throw crossers and throw four touchdowns and six hit completions. Like, no, like, you might actually have to, like, think things out and sequence them to actually catch guys off guard, because this is a much more talented defense. It's a much more well-structured defense. So I think we're going to learn more about, like, basically what is this offense going to try to look like for the rest of the season when they start playing against, you know, their peers, like other playoff teams, other teams with aspirations of going on a run. And I think this is going to be a game we learn about, a lot about. So I just want to see kind of like their sequencing and how they decide to attack a Lions defense that overall might be a smidge more talented than them.
Right. One where they actually are not beaten up on the NFC South. Like, yeah, this actually feels more like a playoff game, which it should. And, you know, Mike Evans is, if you run all that man coverage, Mike Evans is a tall order. Like, he that's a hard guy to play against for four quarters, you know, and it's catch him every single time. And Baker's going to try him. So really, if it's a Mike Evans game, it's a Baker game, it's a blocking, protecting game for the Bucs, I already can kind of picture the other side of the ball because I've seen it twice last year, and I kind of feel like the Lions have a good, you know, good game plan for that. So it's going to come down to really how many plays they can make on offense. And I think that's going to be the passing game. I think it's going to be passing downs. So I really, if they hit a couple, that's the high variance plays that they need. That's what you need when you're 7.5 point underdogs, even if you're the division favorite. For me, the Lions win. I'll just do what you do. Pound the rock, win on third down. That's it for them. They have the same O-line coach, the same OC, Goff. They have the same center. They just need one or two firework plays on third down, pound the rock. Let the receivers, Amon-Ra St. Brown, Laporta, Jameson Williams, let them do the work. Khalif Raymond, the immortal Khalif Raymond, let them do work. And that's kind of just how you build that win. Do you have anything to add there?
No, I think that covers it. Yeah, this, like you said, it's just a very, very standard NFL matchup, you know?
Like, yeah.
It feels like very, very old school in a way, like how they're going to present this and go at each other.
I like when I can recognize everything as a guy. Even with Bulls, it's like, yeah, they're crazy, but it's like kind of traditional crazy.
Right, traditional crazy.
it's like, oh, Tickle Bow. I remember that. Like, yeah, so this is more that it kind of feels more at home, this type of game and all the run game stuff, everything. So, yeah, I'm kind of excited to watch this game. That's why we highlighted it. All right, next up, moving to Sunday Night Football, we have two of the offseason sexy teams, two of the fun teams, they won the offseason, I think, on both sides, the AFC and the NFC. We have the Bears at the Texans in Houston. 6.5 point favorites, the Texans are. Chuck, when you're watching this game, the Bears have the ball. What are you keeping an eye on?
Can they complete a pass? I'm joking. Well, I'm not joking, though. I'm joking, but like, I'm not joking.
Don't have to worry about DeAndre Sweat and Jeffrey Simmons, at least this week.
But honestly, the way I feel about the Bears is I would imagine that's probably the worst their offense looks maybe like the entire Caleb Williams era, because there's
right.
there's like when you talk about extremes, like as hard as it is to be that good, like it's also hard to be consistently, you know, that bad as they were throwing the ball on Sunday. And like, if you're a Bears fan, the cope is, hey, we at least we got a defense and special teams touchdown to kind of buoy us while we move through this. But you also know you're almost never going to score a defensive touchdown and a special teams touchdown in the same game. You're also very unlikely to score a defensive touchdown or a special teams touchdown in any game. So that was not a sustainable plan for winning. I guess the one thing that I'm looking for is the same thing that everything's looking for. Like what needs to go in place, like, for this passing game to be operational? Like, is this a situation where their interior line is just like way worse than we thought it would be? Because boy, Tavondre Sweat and Jeffrey Simmons were running those boys over like they weren't even there on some plays. Mm-hmm. That gets a lot easier this week because you don't have those guys in the middle. Texas don't have anyone like that. We saw last week Texas defense is susceptible to getting scored on. Now, Anthony Richardson was playing like an absolute video game character last week, but you can say that Caleb Williams has some of the same traits like as a thrower. Maybe it's not like quite, you know, Josh Allen plus arm where you're slipping on turf and still throwing a 65-yard dime off
but
your back
foot. He can create stuff. Yeah.
Right, but he can create stuff. So I just want to see operational passing game get back to like looking like an NFL offense, because I really can't imagine that they ever play that poorly again. Now it's just like, will it be enough to outscore CJ Stroud? I don't know, but luckily your defense is in the slot like they showed in the second half last week.
Yeah, Shane Waldron's on fraud watch for me a little bit. Just a little bit. I've liked his stuff in the past, but it's always felt siloed, where it's like it's a lot of good ideas, but not cohesive. And it just kind of, I'm just watching, just making sure. Like, there's even a couple design examples. Like, they converted on a fourth down, and they had a Roman Dunze motion across. They had him block the linebacker, and then the tight end block the safety. So you always want to block like bodies, so tight end, linebacker, receiver on safety. And that was kind of interesting to me. Like, that's also just got, you know, I look for these things as canary in the coal mines, because then it's like, all right, how much detail to design do you have? And it's like little things like that. That fits me. It gets me a little antsy. A little too much Keenan Allen. A little too much.
Yeah.
A little too much. I think we got to realize what Keenan Allen is these days. He's an auxiliary target. He's a supplemental guy. He is not a primary target. He's not a guy you design stuff for. Maybe third and five or less, or low red zone, where he can just win a quick one-on-one, get the first down, get over. But he is not a guy you have double-digit targets for. I know Roman Dunze is battling stuff right now, but you have this other guy named DJ Moore, who's really good. Yeah, that focus needs to go to him. So that's where it was just too much. Keenan Allen is just, it's not getting open. He had the drop in the red zone as well. It's just, that's what he kind of is. That's how he was last year. It was the, as Stephen Ruiz said, Sharif Abdul-Rahim point scoring at receiver last year, which I always thought was just perfect. But I think this game, going against the Texas defense, is they're not as burly up the middle, like we mentioned, Sweat and Jeffrey Simmons, but they still have a good pass rush. So they need to run the ball better. Last week they had to bounce everything to the outside because they could literally get nothing up the middle because of those guys. So this might be a get right game for interior running, but then their running backs are DeAndre Swift, who is allergic to running between the tackles. So it's just a lot of like, huh, this is actually a little dicier. And I was a little more apprehensive about this offense than others. I'm still excited about Caleb and some other parts of it, but it's just that might be some up and downness, like you said, but I think the worst was last week. This is a good chance for them to get right with running the ball, and also just Caleb not having some of those uncharacteristic, feel more comfortable having not some of those uncharacteristic misses that he had last week. He still had some darts, some absolutely brilliant throws. He's so I know the creation stuff is so cool. The in the pocket stuff is so awesome. And I think this week against a heavy zone team, hopefully they don't break too many blitzes at him. If they can block up Daniil, block up Will Anderson, you can maybe see a little bit more of that on Sunday night. Because, maybe Cole Kmet game too, working over the middle. That's still the weakness of this defense. So yeah.
The one thing I came back to with Caleb after the game is, and I'm trying to figure out how to frame this, but like, we know at times like he's been a guy that can kind of ride the emotional roller coaster, to say. So like, when I thought about basically, especially like the missed throw to Keenan Allen and some of the other plays, I'm like, buddy, Get it. First NFL game.
Yep.
Freaking out a little bit.
Yep.
Just calm down.
Everyone has it.
You belong here. You know, this is where you're supposed to be. Yep. Trust me. But I want to see in game two if, like, if that was first game jitters, holy shit, I achieved my dream. I'm where I wanted to be, first pick in the draft. I made it. I cashed in every dream I had. Now you just got to settle in and actually just play the game.
I just don't want any bad habits to keep building because they were starting to build at USC. And I was willing to overlook him. I just was willing to see that he was trying to do the right thing a lot, but that ecosystem was bad for it. And so now I'm like, don't do this more. Like, let him get settled a little bit before we kind of get into this mode. So we'll hopefully have a game where he feels a little bit better there. All right, but now we got the Texans, or when the Texans have the ball against the Bears defense, a strength-on-strength matchup, which should be very fun. Charles, what's the one thing that you are checking out on this side of the ball?
I'm fascinated to see, honestly, like how Tremaine Edmonds handles everything that this offense throws at you. Because, man, he had some crazy plays last week. And I remember when he got signed by Chicago, I was like, I don't know about that one. Like he was real up and down in Buffalo. But it kind of seems like all the memes about him, like, oh, he's just a boy. He's 19 years old.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Like maybe some of that stuff was like kind of true.
Kind of true.
Right. Because if I was 20 and got, you know, if I turned 20 a couple weeks after getting drafted, like functionally, like I'm 19, like when my name gets called on draft day, yeah, I might have a little bit of a steeper slope, like towards just being ready for everything that being a professional football player entails, because I think he just looks flat out good right now. And now you have, you know, Joe Mixon is coming. He had a good game last week. Dalton Schultz is still there. CJ is not afraid to throw over the middle at all. I think that this will be a big time game for Tremaine Edmonds. And in the same way that like Vita Vea is kind of the linchpin for what the Bucs want to do on defense in the game versus the Lions, I think that Tremaine Edmonds is going to have a huge role in how this game plays out for the Bears defense, because like you kind of have this linebacker who athletically can cover all this ground in the middle of the field versus a quarterback in a run game that wants to be in the middle of the field. Mm-hmm. I think that's a fun matchup.
Yeah, Edmonds and Edwards in the middle there. The safeties too, Jaquan Brisker and Kevin Byard. I'm focused on them too because like the Texans ran all over the Colts. And they just ran zone. 19 of their 33 running back runs were successful, which is insane. Joe Mixon's great in zone, so they're going to run a lot of zone. The Bears, who run a lot of zone coverage, quarters, rotate the three, things like that, that's kind of their standard. That's a lot on the safeties and the linebackers to make it all right, because they're not going to throw extra bodies at it. They're not going to slant, do crazy stuff. So those guys have to come downhill and not get beat over the top too. So yeah, those line. I'm glad you brought up Edmonds, Edwards, Brisker, Byard. Like those four, they're the game. Like those four in the little square in the middle, they are the game for the Bears defense. Luckily, I think they're good, but I just think the Texans offense is extremely good and can attack that area. These receivers against the DBs, more strength on strength. You know, Johnson, Stevenson, Gordon, Collins, Diggs, Dell. So it's a lot of good players versus a lot of good players. And yeah, I'm excited to watch this one. Stroud versus all the zone coverages. So you'll get to see him, you know, really going to work as a quarterback, probably progressing. This is why you get multiple receivers, is to beat coverages like this. It's going to be good. It's going to be a really fun one. All right, Charles, watching this game, how do you think the Bears can pull off a win?
I think they can pull off a win by playing like the rookie quarterback protection plan game book. Like, hey, their D-line, it's not Sweat and Simmons. Like, we should have a lot more success running the ball. Hopefully you have a lot more success like versus quick pressures in the A gap and B gap, because that was a big problem for them. If week one was a gut check and you kind of failed in terms of like, we're going to be tough, we're going to be a stout physical football team.
Yeah.
This is a week where you can at least start to feel good about yourself, because the Texans are not really a stout physical football team in the middle. Now, what I want to see is what I'm also watching for here is like the rookie quarterback limit test of how many times can I get away with throwing at Derek Stingley. Like that will be really interesting, because I wouldn't imagine that that's something that Caleb like inherently fears, but he might learn that it's going to be a bit of a challenge as the game goes on.
Yeah, it's a little different. They little get different. Better in the NFL,
but,
too.
But he should still try, though, just to see what he can get away with. You
that's why he wanted to play. He wants to see what their limits are. Yeah, clean up the mistakes. They had, you know, it's a rookie quarterback back there, new OC for everybody else that's been there. Got plenty of new faces. Some of the operational stuff was just still kind of lacking for me. Now they're going on the road, so that's always just a thing. Yeah, rookie quarterback on this first game of the road against with a Houston crowd that I'm sure really loves their team right now. So this is going to be some good exposure for them as well. So now that's just tough. But like you said, I think it's the rookie quarterback game plan, which is running, which is why that's important. I think anyone going against the Texans has to do this. You don't want the ball in CJ Stroud's hands anyway. So control it. Hit a couple of your good plays. Get to a lot of third manageables, a lot of stuff that Caleb can just drop back and just play calm. He doesn't have to create something crazy. That's ideally how this game goes. And just, you're not going to score him and hold him to 0 or 7 or 10 points. This is too good of an offense. But just limiting this offense, make him kick field goals. I think, but the Bears defense can do that. I do think that's going to be just a really fun matchup on that side of the ball. How the Texans win, I think it's just you overwhelm the offensive line. You overwhelm that Bears offensive line with your pass rush. That's it. I think Darnell Wright's a good player, but you can get after the other guys. Braxton Jones is solid, but you can get after all the other guys. And yeah, that's it. And be what you are on offense, and kind of the same thing for that Bears defense, Texas offense. Kind of they have the same thing. Do what you do and do it well.
I want to see how the Bears, like they've kind of spammed young picks on the defensive line, and this is also kind of a good test for them this week, because I think the interior of the Texans line, like, they're way improved if week one's anything over last year. So I kind of want to see, like, how they handle this gut check this week. Like, okay, here comes Tunsil and Scruggs, and Kenyon Green looks better.
Most now, improved player in the league, Kenyon
right,
Green.
Seriously.
I'll say that. I'll go on record saying that. Holy crap, he looked fantastic. And, he looked like a bust, like, a year ago.
So on NFL Pro, like, the new app where – you know, the NFL has where you can watch like all the film. I already have like save playlists of all like the rookie defensive linemen I want to watch this year and like some of the second year guys. So I have like a playlist that's going to populate with like Jervon Dexter plays. So I watched them from last week. I was like, there's a little room for improvement there. I see the vision, but like this is going to be, okay, where am I actually in terms of like actually being a good NFL player?
Andrew Billings is their bestie tackle right now, but it's like, I know. I like the young guys. It's just, yeah, not all the way there. Not all the way there yet. It's the other spots that are pretty damn good. All right. We are going to take our last break. Then we're going to get to the Monday night game, which is just going to be so fun to talk with you, Charles. And then a couple bonus hitters after that. See you guys in a second. Okay. We are back with some Monday night football. We have a bird matchup. We have the Falcons going to the link, going to Philadelphia to play the Eagles. Eagles are 6.5-point favorites. Again, it is Monday night. Charles, when the Falcons have the football, what are you keeping your eye on when you watch your favorite football team in the world?
I'm going to have binoculars on, and I'm going to be looking for number 9 on the sideline and watching if he ever decides to put his helmet on. That's where we are. Week one, it's over. The season's shot. It's done.
Good thing you got those preseason reps, you know?
Or maybe they knew Kirk wasn't healthy, so they were like, we got to protect someone here, right?
That's what's starting to make more sense.
Right.
It's starting to make more sense.
Because the funny thing was, like, even during the summer, Taylor Heinicke, who was a backup quarterback last year, like, before they played a preseason game, he was like, I see the writing on the wall here. I'm not going to be here long. He said that in a press conference. And then comes out and plays basically all the preseason snaps. Like, what are we doing here? Now I know what we're doing here. I watched the Steelers game. Now I understand what we're doing here. Kirk can't move.
Nope.
He can't move at all. And it sucks because, like, I watched Bijan, like, and I'm like, yo, because I kind of forgot, like, what his stat line was. And then I watched the film. It's like, damn. That was a good game for him. Like, he looked elusive, he looked physical, he looked explosive. Now look at the box score. He's 18 carries for 68 yards. Like, dude,
like 150, right?
Dude, it felt like 150, right?
Yeah.
And this is it's not tenable. It's not tenable at all. And it's not just like Kirk's a statue in the pocket. Well, he's always been slow. No, like, there's a difference between like being a statue and I can't drop out of under center because my Achilles hurts or my Achilles tore. I don't have the range of motion. You know, I have to, if we want to run the ball, we have to get in pistols so I can just turn my back and hand the ball instead of, you know, getting back there. We can't run play action because I can't do a run fake right now. So you're talking about like this stagnant nothing burger offense in terms of what they can actually run that's going to make life easier for the offense. So, like, if you go back in the second half of that Steelers game on Sunday, you just see, like, the Steelers defensive line go, you can't move. Like, no. they're teeing off. They're just teeing off, right.
Yeah.
And usually, if your team, like, starts teeing off and you're like that, oh, maybe we'll run a bootleg, we'll run a draw, something mm-hmm. like that. But we can't do any of that. So it just turns into Caleb McGarry and Kyle Pitts fighting for their life against TJ Watt. And we all know how that ends in, like, a million sacks, a couple penalties. But honestly, I felt like they should have given the one where he was offsides because he's going to get home regardless. So, dude, it's
ball
so...
don't lie.
Yeah, it was a ball don't lie offsides. The quarterback can't move. Just let him hit him, please. Just let him crush the quarterback. Caleb McGarry's not fighting back.
No.
So you have, like, this immobile quarterback, like, truly immobile, not like, like an old Peyton Manning, like, can't move. Behind an offensive line that I know you and I have maintained one of the most overrated units in the league this summer. Unbelievable. I couldn't believe people were having them ranked number two, ranked number five, ranked the top 10. It's like, what are you watching? what are you guys watching?
I kept going, they're fine.
They're fine. But they were also mostly bad last year.
Like, yes, they were.
So, like, the fact that they struggled.
Everyone watched every Falcons game. We know that.
Yeah. The fact that, like, they struggled on Sunday, that was not surprising to me. But there were people who were caught off guard by that based on the narrative. So now, all right, we got a game against Philly. It's not like it's getting much easier. I know that they've been like, oh, you know, we're trying to figure out this pass rush situation. But, like, their fourth pass rush is still Bryce Huff. Right. That's more than enough to beat where the Falcons are right now.
Because they're built like a contender.
Yes.
Like an actual contender, not a team that says they're going to be a contender, and that's why they take quarterbacks early.
Dude, it's crazy that a team that finished with a top 10 pick is still not actually that good.
Looks like they could use some defensive pieces.
Yeah. Literally, how about any rookie playing?
Yeah. That's right. Because they didn't have a single one, right?
No, not a single rookie played for them because Penix is sitting. J.D. Bertrand got one or two snaps.
Because Aurora was inactive.
Trice is out for the season.
Trice is out.
Dorless was inactive. Casey Washington was inactive. Penix is on the bench. This is your entire class. So this is what I was so concerned about during the offseason because I was telling people, like, guys, like, all they did was add Kirk Cousins to a team that picked top 10.
They got Darnell Mooney, though.
No, actually, we got Ray McLeod because apparently he's going to be the leading receiver on the team this year. Fire Arthur Smith, right?
Hey, what did Drake London finish with? Two catches? Fire Arthur Smith.
But this is such a nasty mindset to be in after one game. But this is
your favorite team. That's what's the best part.
I know. It's my favorite team. And I'm so sick of them. Like, because you could see all of this happening so long ago because... Mm-hmm. Because honestly, when the free agency signing happens to get Kirk, I'm like, cool. That's way better than what she had. If he's healthy, like, that's fine.
Good,
but, like,
cool.
Okay, cool. Like, you can add pieces around it. And then go out and say, get Mooney. What else?
Ray McLeod.
You got Rondale Moore.
Yeah, you got Rondale Moore.
He broke, I mean, Ray McLeod, Rondale Moore. It's like the same thing, basically. He broke his leg, so he's not playing. And then you start thinking, oh, damn. So all they did was add Kirk and Darnell Mooney, the first round picks on the bench, and every single other pick is inactive or on IR except for your fifth round linebacker who's a specials teamer. Like, this is malpractice. And now the hard part
division
is—
Division favorite, by the way.
Right, division favorite, which is, I was saying, like, I think the Bucs might be better. The Bucs are definitely better. But now for this season, you blew the game versus Pittsburgh. Now you have games against the Eagles and Chiefs coming up. So if you're 0-3 coming off of the first three, your season's done. Like, you're not making the playoffs. In fact, I did the research on this.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Once you're looking up
all the 0-3 teams to make the playoffs, there have been five in the history of the NFL. Or since the NFL went 16 games, there have been five teams to make the playoffs after starting 0-3. And only one team to win a game, the 1992 San Diego Chargers. The last 0-3 team to make the playoffs was the Texans in 2018. So, Right. So, like, you're talking about a miracle. And I think the Bucs have established themselves as competent enough where you don't have to worry about that. This season's over, dude. It's week two. And, dude, I have my Falcons buddies, like, texting me during the week. they're like, wait, hold on. Like, our season's done. I'm like, yeah, it is. maybe we can get to like 7-10 after this next stretch, but like that would be heroic because if you start off 0-3, it's probably unlikely you go 7-7 the rest of the way.
I just think it's more just because it's like, this is way more realistic than I think we all, I think we did expect. And I'm looking last week and you're going against that offense, the Steelers offense, which could run a little bit, but it's just still like so sloppy and doing all this stuff. And it just felt like the Steelers were controlling the game the whole time because the Falcons offense, which some people were optimistic about, and because they dropped Kirk Cousins in, he can't move. You mentioned the bootleg thing. TJ Watt, who already kind of does this anyways and runs down the line and is over aggressive, he had nothing to worry about. You can see him go, oh, Kirk Cousins isn't bootlegging. So he just ran Bijan down like three times.
Green light. Let's go.
He really did, because it wasn't even, it turned into like what they call better bees. You better be right. It turned into, no, you're right. He can't bootleg. You have nothing to worry about. So just run. So it's just that hinders the whole offense. No draws. Like you said, the screens were telegraphed. Screens had a couple of moments. But I mean, they need to get London involved in this game because that's the area to attack for him, the middle of the field. Are you running any bootleg stuff? Like, are you going to help this out? Last week, they were terrified of TJ Watt. So they kept running away from Caleb McGarry. So they kept running to Jake Matthews side. This week, the Eagles have Bryce Huff and Nolan Smith. So are you running outside more? Like, you're going to go with that, even if McGarry's...
They can't win this game. I don't think they can at all. Like,
even if McGarry's mid, like, that's better than that.
It's not even that. Like, on the flip side, like, cool. Like, you gave up some drives to a pretty crappy, sloppy offense, and here comes one with, Saquon Barkley, who just scored 3 touchdowns in his first game with the Eagles, A.J. Brown, Devonta Smith. Like, you were about to see a huge increase in... I mean, I think they just get blown out. Whatever. They suck.
I know, because I was going to say, when the Eagles have the ball, I'm watching Matt Judon drop into coverage. I'm watching Darnell Washington block Matt Judon one-on-one in pass protection with no help.
Justin Simmons had a nice little game, though.
He did. Yeah, and Bates is Bates. And I know. So I think, too, is that I'm just watching that. So I know what the Eagles offense is. Even if I have questions on it, I don't think this Falcons defense is the defense equipped to challenge it. Like, the Steelers are running all over them. The Eagles have a better run game with Saquon Barkley, everything. It's whoever A.J. Terrell isn't guarding. But they might just get into slot formations, put Judon in space, or get Avante Maddox out there and just go to work. The Falcons could do so much. Like, they try to do so much with moving their guys around, but you can attack the middle of the field still. Like, you know, there's nobody there at the linebacker position that you're truly worried about. So, man, I don't know. I think Kellen Moore is going to just have Devontae Smith. I let him have a field day. Like, if someone else is guarding A.J. Brown, attack him. Like, it might not
Chiefs
be
Chiefs next week.
Man. And they got Raheem Morris and Jimmy Lake, and they're going to do like blitzes and simulateds because I know how they're going to think and go, like, well, we have to get after Jalen Hurts. I just think it's going to get gashed. So, do we even have to say how they have to win? Because I think we both think the Eagles are going to win. Yeah, the Falcons, they have to pound the rock over and over and over. Eagles' run defense isn't great, but that's what they have to do. And they have to do 2 snaps of play action. And they have to create some turnovers. So, like, that's the other thing. But
give them some, you know, whatever y'all got back there, just throw it out to the crowd.
Throw it out there.
And tell him that he's going to have to just tough it out and put some ice on it after the game.
Kitchen sink game. Kitchen sink it.
They're
not a contender. It's just 30 in kitchen sink game in week 2. Eagles, just do your thing. That's kind of how I think they win it. Just completely overwhelm them on offense. Even if the Falcons offense does okay, I think just the Eagles offense has such an advantage, especially at home. All right. We got one thing real quick, literally one sentence. We each kind of had a game. We overlapped on all the other games. We each had one game that we each were like, I kind of had a little something here. Yours is a little funnier than mine, I think. So we're going to go with the Chargers and the Panthers because you want it. Usually, I'm all about the schlock. Like, I love a good schlocky football game because there's little tiny things I want to watch. But even I didn't rope this one in. So why are you saying that you're keeping an eye on Chargers Panthers? Your literal one sentence thing about why you're watching this freaking game.
I'll do a couple short sentences. Derek Brown's out. Jim Harbaugh's here, and he smells blood in the water. They just gave up 47 points to the Saints. Jim's going to try to run for 300. I think we should all just maybe not watch it, but like just check in on the box score every once in a while.
Is that what we're putting?
Yeah.
Should we say they break 200 rushing yards?
That, yes. Yeah, I think okay. they can.
You say it's Dude, easy. Yes, yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
they got stampeded with Derrick Brown on the field.
I know.
This is an expansion defense without him.
And they're not going to get great field position. And so it's just, and Herbert looked great.
Yeah. I unironically think the Panthers should trade Clowney.
And just get some picks and just like trade something.
The season's done.
Even if it's like a fifth, just get something. Yeah. Herbert has five got throws, interior it's rough in protection. So we'll just see it from there. I have 49ers and Vikings, the Sam Darnold Bowl. But really, it's just I want to see the 49ers defense against a what I consider a step up offense from what I saw from the Jets with Rodgers, who also couldn't move in a run game. But I was kind of limited because of that. So Darnold isn't Aaron Rodgers, but he can move a little better. And I think this Vikings pass offense has a little bit more teeth. So that is, even with Jordan Addison maybe not out there, this might be the Jalen Naylor game. But Aaron Jones' run game against this 49ers defense that I still have some questions on. So that's, it's like, kind of optimistic run game for the Vikings and kind of pessimistic run defense for the 49ers. That's what I'm keying in on when I watch this game. All right. Seven games. First normal-ish preview episode here on Football 301, but we are closing it out right now. Me and Charles, we will be back on Tuesday previewing week 3. This is going to be the routine from here on out. I am Nate Tice. You can find me at Nate_Tice. You can find my Football 301 playbook on Yahoo right now. Charles McDonald, where can they find you and what have you been working on this week?
You can find me on Twitter at 4verts. Wrote a couple columns this week. Just getting back in the swing of things, you know.
That's it.
That's all I've really done this week. Just wrote some columns, done some radio hits. That's about it.
At least the weather turned for me. Not so much for you. I'm getting that. So it really feels like football season for me. But subscribe to us, follow us, rate us, please. 5 stars, wherever you get your podcasts at. Also watch us on YouTube, on the Yahoo Sports YouTube channel. This, all the fancy stuff that we have. We've got plenty of great content out there. Follow Yahoo Sports on Snapchat as well, if you're into that. Also send your mailbag questions to football301mailbag@yahoosports.com. We're going to start checking those out pretty soon. And also thanks to Brett Stone and Adi behind the scenes. Thank you so much for listening. Enjoy week 2. See you guys next time.